you sit in traffic now. But later, there's a nice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is my co-host from Loden Sports, Matt Pajak. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey. Happy whatever day it is to you, whoever's listening to this.
Should be Wednesday by the time we put this out. Should be a Wednesday or maybe a Thursday. It'll be a Thursday probably because we're recording on Wednesday.
Yeah, but I mean, they could be stashing this for like a listen later in the week. You never know.
That's true. They don't have to listen to it the day it comes out. It doesn't self-destruct like a message from Inspector Gadget, you know?
Yeah, we're the number two podcast right now on all podcast platforms nationwide, only behind Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman's new podcast, Dudes on Dudes. So
we're ahead of Caller Daddy.
We're ahead of Caller Daddy. We're ahead of Rogan. We're ahead of Bussing with the Boys. We're ahead of Andrew Schultz, the comedian. And honestly, we're the only ones that don't have a presidential candidate on air for an interview. So
we're going to stay that way.
Yeah, we're going to keep it that way. That seems to be the thing to do these days in the podcast realm, these days, meaning fall 2024 ahead of election season. But we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about something else that's going on. Fall 2024 during election season, playoff baseball, Jeff. NLCS, ALCS, we're in the thick of it right now. Two mostly uncompetitive games to start the NLCS. I don't know. It's kind of tough. It's kind of tough, you know, in even looking at the ALCS, like the pitching has been not great out of the chute. Like Bybee lasted four outs last night for the Guardians. Cantillo was not great the previous night for the Guardians. In the NL,
putting it lightly.
Yeah, they started Brazier and then went to Landon Knack and got lit up. The Dodgers did in game two. Game one, who pitched for the Mets in game one that got absolutely lit up, because that was also not a game by the third or the fourth inning. And I'm just hoping that something can kind of like solidify here and we can get ourselves like a nice little like, hey, I want to tune in. But you know what, Jeff, last night, ALCS game two, Garrett Cole, Tanner Bybee last four outs. Cleveland was in that game pretty much the whole game. But it felt like the task of trying to push across one run at any given point was like trying to, I don't even know. I don't even know. Like it was like trying to take like a, like keep a toddler quiet in church for an hour. You know what I mean? It wasn't something that Cleveland was going to be able to do.
You were reaching. You were like, I need an analogy here.
I need something that's difficult. Keep a toddler quiet. Like a 2 or 3 year old quiet for an hour in church. I mean, Jeff, it was like,
be mad at a 2 or 3 year old in church, you know, making some noises. Come on, people.
I'm not saying be mad at them. If your task was to keep them quiet for an hour in church,
it's not easy.
It's an uphill task. And that's exactly what Cleveland was facing yesterday.
And it was Kodai Senga, by the way, who got hit up,
got rocked. He got rocked.
He gave up three runs. I'd say more than that, he walked the house. He walked four batters in an inning and a third, and then gave up a couple of hits. And then Peterson got hit, and then Buto was hit a little bit later on.
That's right. Peterson came in and got hit.
Yeah. That's when it really was kind of like felt like, oh, this game is out of reach.
Yeah. I don't know. That Cleveland, yeah. Like, look, maybe, and if you're a Cleveland fan out there, I'm sorry. Because I know a lot of Cleveland fans, and it's a good ball club. It's a really good organization. Love the way they develop talent. They get these guys to the big leagues, but it just feels a little bit like a participation trophy, ALCS against these Yankees.
So far.
I don't know. We'll see what it looks like back in Cleveland. But I think their biggest thing, and there's a lot of, this is a completely different conversation. We are not going to go down this rabbit hole, Jeff, but I do want to throw this out there. For the people, like Cleveland is like a little bit of like the example of like the, all right, we're going to go offensively very contact oriented. We're going to go away from like the new school line of thought of like strikeouts and home runs. You know, they've got a lot of guys in the lineup that can handle the bat to ball skills, you know, and that bit them in the butt last night. They got guys on base. They did that. It was, I was like praying for a ball to the gap. They had the bases loaded multiple times. They had two guys on early in the game. It was like, I was praying for a ball to the gap. They couldn't get that one more hit, you know? That's what was lacking, because if they would have just had, if someone would have just put a ball in the gap or put a ball over the fence, then it's either a tie game or they're ahead or whatever it is in the first five innings of that game. But it was just, they got the bases loaded. They got guys and runners in scoring position, and they just could not. Like that from third base to home for the Cleveland Guardians last night in game two was not 90 feet.
Yeah.
It was a mile and a half. Anyway,
one way to put it. Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I think at times things can feel like they're exposed in short sample sizes that, you know, get magnified because of the moment. It's been a pretty good offense all year long. You know, there's been some things that haven't gone their way. I think the one narrative that I kind of buy into here is, if it's the Mets versus the Yankees, it's because both of those teams have starting pitching. The Dodgers have just been ravaged by injury. They only have a couple of starters. They're rolling out guys like Walker Buehler tonight. You know, if you've had listened to this, you probably know what happened in that game versus like Severino. And I just feel like you do have a more traditional starting rotation with both the Mets and the Yankees. And I think that it's served him well thus far, you know?
Yeah, you got your Walker Buehler gear on right now. People can't see Jeff right now because this is a podcast, but he's got his W Worcester W hat on, W beanie, and he's got his B.
I guess technically it's a WB situation.
Walker Buehler.
Right? That was not intentional, but apparently it was. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you could kind of look at both of those things as like, all right, when you get into a deeper series, we're in a seven-game series now, right, after five threes and whatever. In a seven-game series, that really matters because it's just those couple of innings that you can save relievers for, that you're not pitching guys like day after day after day. And I know it's the end of the season, and sometimes that can work. It's just a lot, and I think it's a lot for Cleveland in particular because of how bad – the starting pitching has been for them a majority of the season. They had some injuries, you know, guys underperformed, you know, whether it's Tristan McKenzie or Logan Allen, you know, Shane Bieber's out, Gavin Williams dealt with injury and ineffectiveness. You know, it was guys like Matthew Boyd and like Ben Lively that really provided a lot of value for them. I read this article on Fangraphs, and it talked a little bit about how the Guardians are one of two teams that have ever made the playoffs. The other was the 2020 Braves. And we know how crazy those playoffs were in terms of the amount of teams qualifying, et cetera. They're the only other team that had a higher WAR from their relievers than from their starting pitching staff that's ever made the playoffs. And that was true of Cleveland this year. And I just think relying on the bullpen so heavily, and really the bullpen is what ended up winning them that series against Detroit. It was very close to them losing that series against Detroit. That I think that is a major, that's a major flaw. I didn't think they would get through Detroit simply because of that fact. And it's not like Detroit has a ton of traditional starters, but they do have a little bit more length within their ranks. Especially against this lineup. This Yankees lineup keeps coming, man. It's tough to play matchups when you don't have starters giving you five or six innings.
It's really tough. I do really like the Cleveland bullpen, and I do like they're deep. You know, it's like I remember, you know, you go back to what was that, the year they lost to the Cubs in the World Series, and like Andrew Miller, like they rode Andrew Miller hard and he was lights out. But it was like it was kind of like a 1-2 man show at that point. Like they kept referring to him as the four horsemen last night during the broadcast. But like you can't be going to the, can't be going to the four horsemen in the second inning to try and save the game. And that's what they had to do last night. You know, and Bibee ran into some trouble there. Bibee comes out of the game, inning and a third pitch, bases loaded, and they go to one of those top bullpen arms. So, like, you can't be, I mean, if you're going to them in the fourth, that's probably too soon. But Jeff, I'm with you. I mean, there's an alternate universe here where the Dodgers are going Glasnow, Dustin May at the top, and that's clearly not the universe we're living in. Going, switching back over to the Dodgers real quick. And they're asking a lot out of Jack Flaherty and Yamamoto. To be fair, Yamamoto's got a $300+ million contract. So, like, that's a lot of money. But it is his first year pitching in Major League Baseball and his first time in the postseason. And I know he's pitched on big stages in Japan. That's not the same thing. I mean, we're talking about Dodgers, Mets, NLCS. I think that – basically, I'm agreeing with your point, Jeff. It's you're looking at the Mets. They've got real starting pitching.
Yeah.
You're looking at the Yankees. They've got real starting pitching. And I don't want to say I'm hoping for a Subway Series, but I think it's going to make for the most visually pleasing for a baseball fan.
I think Dodgers-Yankees. I think that's the best thing that can happen.
I just think there's throwaway games in there, like when you roll out Brazier, Landon, Knack, bullpen game.
Yeah.
I'm not into that. I'm not into a throwaway game. Like game two is
in the playoffs doing that. They are still the Dodgers. It's still the best lineup. It's still got the biggest stars. And come on, man. And you're from Massachusetts. You want to see two New York teams play again? I can tell you, I lived through one of those. No one cared. Outside of New York, man, no one wanted to watch that series. They would be better off with, like, the Royals versus the Padres.
I don't know about that.
I'll tell you, man, like, it is not what you think it's going to be in terms of excitement. And the Yankees would just steamroll the Mets. And then Mets fans will complain about how they're the little brother and nothing ever goes right. And woe is me, we're Mets fans. That's exactly what's going to happen. Oh, it hasn't happened before. I've lived through this. This has happened before, Matt. I was 19. You were probably like 7, wearing a sailor suit.
I remember it. Wearing a sailor suit. I remember it. I watched the first like 2 innings of those games and then I had to go to bed.
Yeah, I was watching it in the greater New York area.
Anyway, Jeff, you just got back from the Fall League. You had some eats out there. I want to talk about these eats because Arizona is low-key like a really deep place for food. Like it's got a lot of options. It's a big metro area, and it's a baseball hotspot, whether it's on the amateur side. There's a lot of tournaments out there, spring training. Fall league, a lot of different things happen in Arizona year round from a baseball standpoint. A lot of different people in the baseball world, hopefully listening to this podcast, make trips to Arizona at different times of the year. And outside of what looks to be a really interesting talent pool in this year's Arizona Fall League. You had some eats last week, some old friends that you enjoy every time you go out there, and some new friends as well. Yeah, I'm setting the table for your eat.
Yeah, no, it was very good. I went, the first place I went when I got off of the old air bird bus,
air bird
was my favorite place. That's Blue Adobo. It's excellent. I got there like 2:30 in the afternoon after I checked into the hotel. There was nobody in there, and I got my plate, my triple plate. I mean, they call it Santa Fe plates, something like that. I got my carne adobo, which was ridiculously good. I got myself a cheese relleno, which is also maybe my favorite part of the meal. And then I got a tamale that was filled with smoked pork. So really good beans and rice. It was delicious. Crushed that, felt full, went to my first game shortly thereafter, you know, cut some video back at the hotel because it was in the same, my hotel was right next to the park, so I could just walk right over. When it was, games were at Mesa, and that was opening night. And then I was like, you know, I'm a little hungry. I'm going to go get some In-N-Out. So I went over, I crushed a double-double. I actually sat in the In-N-Out and ate it. What the hell? I had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Crushed the In-N-Out, had a double-double, and animal fries. I hadn't gotten the animal-style fries before with onions and all that. It's good. It's fine. You know, you kind of need that. You need that for the fries. I'm there for the burger. You know, there for the burger, there for the service. But I very much enjoy In-N-Out burgers, the burgers themselves. We don't have to get into a big debate about that or anything.
Yeah, we've talked about this. Me and Jeff are both team In-N-Out. It's a really good burger. It's what we want out of a burger. The fries we acknowledge are very mid, but you can get a double-double animal style fries and a shake for like $7 or $8. And the affordability, especially in the western part of the United States, is, I mean, you're mortgaging your house to get Five Guys, and the difference, like, honestly, I like the In-N-Out burger just in general over a Five Guys burger.
It's better burger.
Anyway, In-N-Out, we're fans. Don't add us.
Yeah. So got that, you know. Then my next day was like a bigger excursion. I went out there, tried some tacos on Tuesday. I had breakfast, unfortunately, and in the hotel bar that day, you know, just into the time, did some work late, you know, all that sort of thing. Tripled up that day. So I had some stops for tacos. I tried Taco Boys, recommended by you over in Tempe. Wow. Blew my socks off. Had some of those Vampiros tacos. Mixed up the meats. I had two servings. I had my first serving, which was like more standard Vampiros. You know, I get some chicken, little carne asada, you know, that sort of thing. Then I mixed it up and I got the cabeza on one, you know, went back for barbacoa, some of that stuff. I mixed up the meats and that was a tremendous experience. Great tacos. I'm a big fan of cabeza. Like, I think if I see that on a menu, taco wise, that's going to be my go-to.
Yeah.
Cow head. Going to eat some cow head. Cow head. That's cow head.
It's the cheek. It's the cheek. So it's
a little cow head. Cow-head.
Yeah. It's cow head. Yeah. Taco Boys. Tacos all carbone. If people know what that is, you know, they cook the meats over the coals. And you know what I really like about Taco Boys? Multiple locations, by the way. If you're ever downtown, by the ballpark, walkable, Taco Boys, got to go. It's great because it's very quick, right? So you go in there, you order, you get your food right away. If you're like, wow, this is delicious, I could totally use another taco, hop back in line, get another one real quick. It's not like a
it's
kind of nice in that way where you can, you know, you can decide when you're done eating based on, you know, when you want to stop ordering, whatever. But but not in like a Brazilian steakhouse way. You still got to go up to the counter and order and pay, but it's just, it's very quick. And yeah, I'm with you. I love Taco Boys. That's Immaculate Eats for me. That's a 70. I think you were a tick below that, but nonetheless, yeah.
It was like a 6.3. Was it a 6.3, 63? Might've been a 67, somewhere in that range. It was in like the mid sixes, you know? Then I went to another taco place on Friday night. That was awesome. A little different vibe. I don't know if it was better or worse. I think it's in the same range. A little bit more of a sit down kind of place. Called Los Taco Chefs. It's on Country Club Drive in Mesa.
Okay.
And I mixed it up. I got six different types of tacos. I don't know if I sent you that. Homemade corn tortillas, out of this world. The corn tortillas were out of this world. I got one El Pastor. I got an asada. Might have gotten two of those. I got a carnitas, which was really tangy. It was a little bit more like, I think it's called maybe like pearl meat when I had it in San Diego. Like it was like spicy and almost like pulled pork. The carnitas, okay. It was different from what you would get like carnitas wise if you go to like Chipotle, you know?
Yeah.
There was something else called Tinga. That was
spicy chicken.
Savory chicken.
Yeah, spicy shredded chicken.
Yeah, bomb. And then there was another one called Longaniza, L-O-N-G-A-N-I-Z-A, Longaniza.
Sounds like a sausage.
Yeah, it was. It was like a chorizo type of pork with serious kick. That was phenomenal. It was almost like, it reminded me a little bit like texture and color wise of like Chinese spare ribs that are like that neon red color.
Oh, you know I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like almost like that, like kind of like a little bit more firm of a texture and then like had spice on it. Man, that was killer. Those were killer. I didn't try the tilapia or the shrimp. I don't need to eat fish out in the desert. I live near the ocean. It's just a rule of mine.
It's fair.
You know?
Yeah. Let me just say though, I mean, just in what you've described through these couple spots that you've been to, again, I know I said it up front, Arizona is like a really sneaky food city because you have the New Mexican cuisine, which a lot of people don't really realize is like its own thing. It is.
Yeah.
You had, you know, tacos, like there's some West Coast influence out there that you can get a California burrito, but then they've got like their regional flair. I know you didn't have the Sonoran hot dog. Shout out Capriccioso.
Did not get a chance.
Grand Canyon. No. It's in the parking lot of a car wash. If you don't know what a Sonoran hot dog is and you're into food, that's a regional item that you should try. I want to go back to the New Mexican restaurant. The Riano is like a, that might be the number one Southwestern food item for me. Like a cheese Riano. They're just delicious. If you've never had one, like that's what you got to have when you go to Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, somewhere in the Southwest, you got to have one of those. I mean, there's even some solid sushi. I know you said no fish in the desert, but I went to a place called Sakana in Scottsdale.
It's probably fine. I'm just being a jerk.
Nah, some people with MLB said that was the only place Ichiro would get sushi when he was in spring training. Sakana in Scottsdale. So if you're ever there and you're looking for sushi, it's a really good spot. Mm-hmm. I recommend it. They also had like a Larry Fitzgerald was one of the rolls on the menu. So Larry was a regular there as well at one point. But yeah, Jeff, Arizona. Good spot for food.
I agree. Yeah, it was very good. Also, shout out to Los Favoritos near the Salt River Park, which had some good burritos. I wish I'd go back and get some of those plates too. It was nice and cheap. I ate the grill, the Mongolian grill that Josh likes. Not a bad meal. You kind of make your own stuff there. If you're into like Asian inspired noodles with like some, you know, vegetables and some protein, not an unhealthy lunch to have, not super heavy, like a lot of the stuff we're talking about, but killer breakfast at a place called Daily Dose. They have a couple of locations. I don't know if the location in downtown Phoenix and Old Town is the same. This is more like a breakfast spot. Unbelievable breakfast. That was where I got those like cinnamon roll pancakes. So they were like three cinnamon, big, you know, big boy pancakes, cinnamon batter, buttermilk, and then had the icing like a cinnamon roll. All three of them didn't need anything on them. Just like you could just eat them straight. They're called the cinnamon roll cakes. They were unbelievable. Unbelievable. I could eat that. Like I actually like the second to like the last, that was the second to last day I had breakfast there. I almost went back on Saturday morning and got them again. And was like, that's probably unhealthy.
Yeah. When you sent me that, it reminded me of one of my all time, and this is an 80 on my Immaculate Eats food guide. One of my all time favorite breakfasts is in South Dennis, Massachusetts. So for anybody who goes up to the Cape, the Red Cottage, cash only, they've got a cinnamon bun French toast, and they also have corned beef hash. That's just out of this world. If you've never had corned beef hash, that's a spot to get it. But the cinnamon bun French toast there, Jeff, very similar to the picture you sent me of that pancake where it's like, yeah, here's French toast. It's got like the little swirly cut in the middle. It's got the icing on there. It's, yeah, I mean, it, when you have something like that and it delivers, it's as good as it looks. It's, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to call that, you know, a top tier breakfast.
Yeah, that was a top tier breakfast item. And just like everything else was good and fresh, good coffee. You know, if I would have ordered any of the egg dishes, they would have been awesome. So Daily Dose over on Rio Salado in Tempe, right over the line from where the park is in Mesa. So if you're staying in Mesa in that area, going to any games, go check out the Daily Dose. It's kind of tucked into this like strip mall almost. It's like a two building. There's two like businesses there, and then there's like a couple of hotels and like an apartment building over there. But it was a banger.
Well, Jeff, yeah, I don't want to like cut you off or anything, but this isn't in it. This can actually be an Arizona food guide episode. At least the first half is, but we do have something to actually talk about today. And I'm going to let you tee that up and then we're going to get into it.
Well, first we're going to take a break and then we'll be back.
Take that break.
All right. And we're back. Second half of the 90th percentile podcast here. Did a lot of chat and a lot of food talk this week. You know, you can tell it's getting to the off season. We're switching it up. You know, we're food guys, like Costco guys. We're food guys, you know.
I mean, you might as well call this episode the Arizona Fall League food preview.
Yeah, I might, you know, I might. But here we are talking about this. So, you know, I think that the thing that we're seeing in college sports is the elimination of the Pac-12, the shrinking of some of these other conferences. We're seeing the power rankings, particularly in other sports, particularly in football. You know, some of these other conferences are really becoming less and less involved. We're seeing teams in the ACC trying to get out of the ACC, which is not something I ever would have thought would have happened 20 years ago. So how do we fix college sports? How do we change this a little bit? Are we at a point where conferences don't matter, Matt? That's what my question is to you and to the listenership. Do college conferences really matter any longer when everything is being shrunk? We got West Coast teams in the Big Ten. You know, it seems like every good sports program in the South is now in the SEC. So do conferences really matter? And how do we even the playing field for the upstart, up-and-coming teams that invest in their programs, that recruit well, that are coached well, in whatever sport? How do we give them an opportunity to compete in the national stage outside of, we'll say, basketball? I think baseball, certainly with a tournament, that sort of thing. Is there a better option?
Yeah, there's no devil's advocate here. I'm 100% with you as a Massachusetts native that conferences do not matter. Just get rid of them. I know people love the ACC logo, right? But it's the Atlantic Coast Conference. Atlantic Coast Conference, and we have Southern Methodist in Texas. We got Stanford and Cal Berkeley. What are we talking about? What are we talking about? Yeah. All right, just get rid of the conferences. Just get rid of the conferences. It's dumb. Right now, it's just if you dropped an alien on Earth and you tried to explain people, they explain to the alien, like, hey, like you got the Atlantic Ocean, you got the Pacific Ocean, and we got these schools out in California that are in the Atlantic Coast Conference. They wouldn't be able to make two cents about it. So someone with some common sense just needs to come in here and just say, like, hey, I think we need to like figure out a way to restructure this so that we look like an educated society.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that I've often contemplated on, you know, a bunch of different scales. I thought about it with baseball, but it wouldn't work. It's too much money at stake. Maybe it doesn't work for college sports because it's too much money at stake. But you look at the English football system and kind of the football systems that you see in Europe, and you have relegation and promotion. And I've always thought a really cool concept, particularly in college football, would be to have a top 25, a top 30 conference, and sort of, you know, move down from there. You could have, you know, however, you know, look at the number of teams in each sport, move it down from there, and have, you know, conference A, B, C, D, E, and you play your way up and down. You know, you have three teams like in the English Premier League, where they're, you know, relegated, which means moves down to the lower conference. And then the top three teams in the lower conference then move up and are promoted to the higher conference. I think it would be an interesting way to keep games competitive. I think it would be an interesting way to challenge a lot of these premier programs to play a tougher schedule. It'd be more like the NFL. Losing a couple of games wouldn't matter as much. And we wouldn't just have all these, you know, whatever, 12-1, 10-2 teams every single year. You might have a champion that lost three games, but they would be playing far more competitive games against more competitive teams. I think that the premier programs that invest, they're not going to slide down. They're still going to be premier teams. But, you know, you look back on like a Boise State and some of these other programs over the past, UCF, where they thought they, you know, were the co-national champion a bunch of years ago. Those teams now have an opportunity to move up from a lower conference and then maybe recruit better, get more funding, get more NIL money, and compete against those top tier teams and see if they really can cut it against the best of the best. And we're not just looking at these sort of uneven samples in much lighter conferences in terms of talent. I think it's better for players. I think with the transfer portal the way it is, teams will, you know, teams that get, you know, relegated will potentially be up for, you know, players that are on those teams will potentially be up for grads in the transfer portal. For teams that are in top conference or in a higher conference, I think it's just a much more fair way to sort of look at this. And there's something that you can aspire to at each step, you know. And I don't think that the lower conferences are any less exciting. If you're a fan of, you know, Blackburn Rovers, like I grew up a fan of Blackburn Rovers. My father's a Chelsea fan. My mother's family's from Blackburn. You know, if they're good in the championship, I'm excited about that. I am watching those games. It's not going to hurt the TV rights. I think it's a much clearer picture of how things work. The college football playoff would be easier to manage, I think, and maybe even expand. I personally feel as though that would be, and you could even have the playoff for like, so like with the championship in England, right? For example, I think the first and second team are promoted, you know, whoever comes in first and second in the regular season, they're promoted. And then they have a playoff, I think, with like teams 3, 4, 5, and 6, something like that, or it might even be 2, 3, and 4. Where they all compete in sort of a 1-2 game playoff or whatever it is. I'd have to have my father on here to have the specifics. I haven't watched a ton of championship level soccer, but there is a playoff for that last spot or the last two spots. I think that could be interesting. Even if you did 4 or 5 teams, right? And maybe you have 30 in the top conference, you could have, you know, playoffs all throughout these different tiers for teams to get that opportunity to move up and progress. And we have exciting games. You could turn those into bowl games that happen all throughout the holiday season. I just think it's an opportunity here for us to restructure college sports, and that it would work in a variety of manners. I think maybe I think basketball right now probably has the best setup in terms of the conferences don't matter as much. They all get to play in the NCAA tournament. Maybe that's one where it doesn't need to be revised. I think football does. I want to get into college football, but it's hard to find consistent good games from week to week, from the beginning until the middle of the season, until conference play really gets going. I think this could make it more interesting. I think it could make it more competitive. And, you know, I think it sort of does away with the conferences, which right now, you know, if you're not in the SEC in football, you're not in the Big Ten, you're kind of on the outside looking in.
Yeah. And I'm not going to speak educatedly here on college basketball. I really like the format of March Madness with the 64. I think for the most part, the right teams get in, you know, so maybe basketball doesn't need it. I do think we should limit this conversation to baseball, because baseball pod to an extent. I do like that you mentioned football, and I agree with you that I think it could really work for football. I mean, there are specific examples in the past couple of years. I think of UCF when they went undefeated and they called themselves national champions, even though they didn't get a chance to play for the national championship. I think like what you're proposing alleviates that, but also they just expanded the playoff. So if UCF goes undefeated, they should be in that new expanded playoff. I think we kind of have to see how that plays out before we make a judgment on, you know, is another overhaul needed or more tweaks needed. But I will say, for, you know, as someone who knows the baseball side of things, like it's a really good idea. And it addresses a lot of things that we have talked about. And I think the number one kind of, I don't know if sticking point's the word for it, but the number one thing that stands out to me about this idea is that it can provide a lot more clarity for programs moving forward, right? So if you are in the American Conference, or if you're in the Big West and you're trying to figure out, you're trying to guess what other programs are doing, how many scholarships are they going to have, you know, what does that all look like? It really gives some clarity to, like, okay, we're going to be playing in, well, let's just call them Division One, Division, or not Division, let's call them Tier One, Tier Two, Tier Three, League One, League Two, League Three. Okay, we're playing in League Two. The average team in League Two has 16 scholarships. So that's roughly where we need to be at to be competitive in this league, right? We know what the average amount of scholarships is in League One, right? Let's say it's closer to like 25, because you've got all of your 30 full 34s, right? It gives like a much more like tangible, like, okay, if we are going to play in this tier, this is where we need to be. This is what our budget needs to look like. It can't just be this guessing game. Right now, if you're a mid-major and you're potentially, you know, talking about upping your scholarships when they expand from 11.7, you know, you're really just playing a guessing game, because you're saying, okay, who else in our conference is doing this? And if we are one of the only ones in the conference to do it, we're going to win our conference, and then we're going to go whatever. That still doesn't help your players, because they got to play in a conference that's weaker, and then they get their first taste of real competition against a comparable opponent that's been playing comparable opponents all year when it comes to the postseason. So anyway, Jeff, really like the idea. Again, if I'm in – let's say tier three, I think there's like roughly 300 and something Division One schools, right? And they don't all play baseball, right? But I don't know what the number is off the top of my head, 215, 300, somewhere in there. But if you have between 25 and 30,
and there are 300 Division One baseball programs.
300. So you're going to have 10.
This is over 300, but yeah.
You're going to roughly have 10 30 team leagues. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. Top 30 teams are in League One. Bottom two at the end of the year, they drop down to League Two. They can get promoted again if they prove that they can run through League Two competition the next year. The top two in League Two, they now know, okay, we won League Two. Right now we're sitting on 15 scholarships. The average program in League One has 23 scholarships. We can go to our athletic department. We can go to our booster club. We can go to whoever our donors, and we can say, hey, we need to get to 23 so that we can be competitive. By the way, here's your hardware. We just won League Two. proof that we're ready to compete at this level and that this is the time. And then to your point, if there are players that are hopping in the transfer portal, those two schools are really appealing to potentially transfer to as two schools that are now jumping up into League One, vice versa. I think that kind of gives a lot more purpose to the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Like, okay, how do I get into, I mean, everybody wants to talk about what college baseball is turning into. There's like a minor league system, you know, the mid majors are becoming minor league teams and, you know, the Power Four schools are becoming, you know, kind of like a separation level. So if we want to talk about it like that, then let's talk about it like that. If you are a really good player and you prove yourself in League Two or League Three or League Four, like if you're in League Four and you perform, maybe you don't make the jump to League One.
Yeah.
But you can definitely make the jump to League Three, right? And like maybe it gives a little bit more purpose to the player that's like, okay, like the competition level for me in Division One baseball, it's not necessarily you're a D1 player. It's like you're a D1 League 3 to 5 player. Go prove it. You prove it. Maybe you're now, you know what I mean?
I think it provides an opportunity for schools if they move up and there's maybe more scholarships available, more money available from the pool, TV rights, etc., to potentially build their programs and keep some more of their players too. You know, because there have been some really productive teams that are mid-majors that, like, the end of the season, you know, you don't go to Omaha or whatever, you don't win any games, like, really in the playoffs, like, it's kind of done. You know, guys are going to walk, and you had a great season. You're headed to LSU. You're headed to Texas A&M. You're headed to Florida. You're headed to, you know, wherever. And I think that big programs, big-name programs that don't invest in particular sports, don't just get to stay in a particular conference and recruit off of that conference strength, you know,
right.
I think that's the bigger thing. And I don't think it could change the tournament. I think you could honestly, you know, take teams from different divisions. You're going to need enough, you know, and still have that tournament feel, you know, with basketball or with baseball, and just take different champions and from different spots. And it's just a more competitive landscape, which is really what we're looking for. I don't think this will ever happen. I think that we'll get yelled at by some SEC fans about this, some Big Ten fans about this, but just something that's, you know, kicked around in my head. And I thought it would be an interesting topic for a podcast. So, you know, if you're stuck around and listen to this, there you go.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm with you. I don't necessarily think it's realistic.
No.
Do you think it's a good idea? I also do think that it probably favors, you know, the little man, which is what we advocate for a lot of the time on this. Is, you know, there's a lot more college baseball programs out there that could benefit from this. And the ones that probably wouldn't love this idea as much, to your point, are the ones that are the haves.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're just being a mouthpiece for the have nots. You know, not trying to rock the boat by any means, but again, I think it's one of those things. It's just, I kind of imagine like, okay, let's say you're a coach in, you know, the MAC conference or the MEAC or, you know, one of those, and you inherit this program, you know, you're not being thrown to the wolves. You can kind of try and build this program. You win, you get to bump up a tier. I mean, that kind of gives, like, you know, if you're the coach, yeah, obviously you're in it for the players, but also, like, it'd be cool to climb the ladder. You know, it would be cool to climb the ladder with your program. It'd be cool to be able to, you know, go show after, oh, I've been at this program for 5 years and we went from being in League 6 to League 4. Got promoted twice in six years. Like, it's a really good resume builder, right, for a coach. It's kind of like you see that a lot in big soccer. And you would be able to answer this better than I could because I don't follow it nearly as closely as you do. But a lot of, like, the big managers in Europe in the top leagues were managers at lower levels.
Yeah, and players.
Right. And the reason why they got those opportunities is because they proved that they could get promoted multiple times through the structure. And a lot of that at those levels has more to do with strategy and actually coaching. At the top level, the top players win the game.
Development too. You know, like, right. Southampton made a lot of money by developing players like Gareth Bale, for example. he goes to Tottenham and then so on and so forth. And then we'll have some upstarts. Doesn't happen all the time, but there are teams that qualify for Europe. We had Leicester City, a bunch of years ago, win the Premier League and then play in Europe. And that really like revitalized their program. I think there's just opportunity here to maybe expand into some non-traditional college sports, college football, college baseball markets that could get behind their team and get some excitement and start to follow the game. I think it's something that could grow the game when we're kind of running out of ideas at this point on how to grow all of our different sports. There's so much saturation, et cetera. So do you think that it's something that would be really interesting? But what do you say we wrap this sucker up? We're just about an hour now, Matt. I want to thank everybody else for tuning in to another episode of the 90th Percentile. We'll be back soon.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's a nice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.